Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Podcast, where we will be discussing Gianfranco Rossi's award-winning documentary, Fire at Sea. I'm Sam Howlett, and this week I'm joined by Jenna Hobbs.
Hiya.
And Helen Seymour.
Hello.
Hello, how are we?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Excellent, good. So we do have an interview with Rossi, the director, coming up a bit later on. So first off, just to talk about the film a bit. The film is set on the island of Lampedusa, a small island just off the coast of Sicily. As Jenna pointed out to us before the show, it's actually closer to Africa, which could potentially explain why it's a major hotspot for migration into Europe, which is kind of the main focus point of the film. And it kind of straddles these two stories on the island, one of the arriving refugees and one of the life of a small boy on the island, Samuel, local to the island, and his family, his daily life. And there's a kind of contrast going on between these two things. So, broadly, what did you think of the film?
I thought it was amazing. Absolutely incredible. I think it's a subject we all think we kind of know quite a lot about. I mean, it's in the news all the time at the moment about the refugee crisis.
Yeah,
it's something that's...
And Brexit.
Yeah, it's all kind of in our sort of sphere. But I think this is the first time I probably have let myself pay such detailed attention to what's going on, I think. And I found it really moving.
Me too. I thought it was a really profound film.
Yeah.
Really excellent.
Great. Yeah, I really enjoyed it too, actually. I don't think you see a lot of documentaries like this at the moment. And I think we'll go into detail a bit later on why we think this is different to not a run of the, you know, your more average documentary. So yeah, but before we go into that, first up, we're going to have an interview with the director, Gianfranco Rossi, who I met up with in London earlier this week. We're delighted to be joined on the Curzon Podcast by Gianfranco Rossi. Thanks for joining us today. So we're talking about Fire at Sea, and which you show us two sides of life on the island of Lampedusa. So you've got Samuel and his life on the island and his family and the locals, sort of contrasted with and compared to the life of the newly arriving refugees.
Yeah, so, these two worlds that they never meet, that they never encounter somehow.
I'm just wondering, what interested you in that story? How did you come across the island of Lampedusa and like these two stories colliding?
Well, you know, people ask me often to me, how come there's no interaction between the two stories? Because there's none. Because since 3-4 years when it was when Mare Nostrum was happened and Frontex and Triton, the border of Lampedusa has been moved in the middle of the sea. So it changed completely the way people arrived in Lampedusa. Before it was like Lampedusa was a point of arrival, and they just came straight with the boat from the coast of Africa straight to Lampedusa. Lampedusa was the first approach, the last post of Europe, and the modality changed because now the boat with all the military barrier that is the boat are intercepted in the middle of the sea. And they changed the way they're brought into Lampedusa with a military boat in the port, and then from the port into the center, and then from the center back to Italy on the main spot, on the main thing. So there's no more interaction between the island and the thing. So, and also in the film, I wanted to create, to give more a sense of an identity of the island, because Lampedusa has been always shot by media, by newspaper, by news, by television, always linked to a tragedy, linked to moments of catastrophes and trouble when people died, when they were like in a big naufrage in the middle of the sea. So nobody really told the story about the island itself, about the people of the island. So for me it was important to give a sense of identity of the place, and then of course having these two words in a way confronting the two reality.
Yeah.
And you know, in between these two real stories that they never touch each other, there's a story of the doctor and the story of the institution, which is the Navy, the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
That somehow they're representing the institutional world. And and then there is a separation, yes, between these two worlds.
Yeah.
And Samuele. But, you know, somehow it holds the story and the metaphor for something that is beyond Lampedusa.
Yeah.
And this I realized while I was shooting with him, that there is always like an element, like an internal element of him that brought me to a different reality, which is the one of the migrants.
Okay. Mm. And did you go to Lampedusa knowing that it was this kind of hotspot?
No, I knew it from... But then, you know, when I arrived there, for example, the island was completely... The center was closed because there was a big fire and they were like restoring the center. So when I arrived there, the island was empty. There were only people from Lampedusa. So in a way, that allowed me always to get in much closer to the population and start telling the story first about the island. Then things start changing again. And then I start filming also the arrivals and people arriving in the centers and the other reality.
Is that quite natural for your filmmaking process, where the story changes as you go along? Like you're going thinking you're filming one something, and then it will change.
And absolutely, when I go to a place, I try not to have too much things that are planned, and I like somehow to be open to the reality. I like the reality to talk to me, and I like somehow to interact with the story and having the story developed in the way that, you know, I never imagined somehow, you know. So it's always like I know where I start, I never know where I end. That's why for me time is very important, you know, to spend a long time there in order to I always say, like, I like to write the story with my camera, I follow the pattern that somehow reality gives to me, so I have to be open to and let the reality talk to me.
Because so how long did you spend filming this? Because
I spent 1.5 years.
1.5 years, okay. Yeah. So not quite as long, because I read
and also did the editing there.
Oh, okay, so you stayed on the island for the whole process then?
Yeah.
It was just there for filming.
Well, I stayed before filming, which I started in December 2014. Before filming, I spent 2-3 months there just without the camera and meeting people and trying to interact with them, just without the pressure of filming.
Yeah, you get pretty amazing access, I thought. So you mentioned there the Navy and the doctors, but also Samuel's family and his school and his an optician. I mean, were people very cooperative with you on the film?
They were, you know, like as I say, like. Time is what builds a relationship and what builds trust. You know, you have to arrive to have a strong trust in order to have people allowing you to be within their life and allow you to enter in their own world. So that takes a lot of time and it's built slowly, but day by day.
Mm. Okay, excellent. What I noticed about the film, and I'm sure not a lot of people have asked you about this, is that it's very observational. When you mentioned there, you like to just let reality dictate how you film. But also noticed, compared to other documentaries, there's no voiceover narration, there's not many like talking head interviews, you're not on camera yourself. I mean, is that important to you about documentaries, that it should be less intrusive and just let the reality take hold?
I don't want to dictate the rule of documentary.
Sure, that's
the way I like to work. I like, you know, when I start a film, I don't ask myself, I'm making fiction, making documentary.
Yeah.
For me, it's just filming and using the language of cinema.
Okay.
It's very important. And so, three words are very important for me. You know, the transformation, like there's a reality, and I have to transform the reality in something else, you know, to create a suspension on that. I mean, reality on its own is not very interesting.
No, sure.
So you have some the language of observation and the language of realism is not enough in order to show the complexity of the new world. Okay. You know? And plus, we have so much information
bombarded
by information. That's for me the big challenge. Always like to close the door and to shutter the door and to give less information than I can and let the people somehow make their own interpretation of him. So I like the word also subtraction. So it's like transforming a place in something else, a story, to subtract information, so to close the door more and more. And then, of course, structuring the film in the editing so that becomes a narrative, a structure in the editing. And also when I film, I know it's very important for me to have a cinematic approach on the thing, and having somehow the language of cinema enforcing reality.
Okay.
You know, and so this is important for me. So the words, see, the language of cinema, it's what for me is important.
So rather than being this is fiction, this is documentary, you'd rather just...
It's important, the difference between true and false. Yeah. You know, what is true and what is false. Okay. And the truth in my film has to be within the people themselves.
Okay. What's the most difficult thing you filmed on the shoot? Because there were certain moments when, I think particularly when you're on the boat with the refugees, and they are, some of them are very ill and crying, and there's even one shot which really stuck with me where there's a dead body being carried away. What was it like filming those? Did you ever feel like maybe you shouldn't be filming this?
Yeah, absolutely. It was very difficult. You know, I never thought that I spent 40 days in this Navy boat you know, one day what would have looked like another rescue in the middle of the sea, like completely with no problem, I discovered death. Death came to me, you know. I discovered death in the middle of the sea. I discovered death 15 miles from Libya. Yeah. I discovered a tragedy under the boat, you know, when you discover that the people died suffocated by the engine, the fuel engine of the boat. It was like a chamber glass. Mm. And I had a few seconds to decide, should I film this or not? If you see the thing, my camera keeps moving right and left, because it was very hard for me to look at this body, which they were like closer to death than to life. And it was a very hard choice, but at that moment I also felt the responsibility that this is a story that people
need to
should know, and I cannot turn my face. And it was very difficult. When you say what was the biggest challenge, was deciding to use this image in the film, and to not using so many others that I had, and somehow to build the film in order to arrive to this tragedy and be able also to live from the tragedy without, you know, being as people somehow can say, pornographic.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Or sensational.
Or sensationalist or morbid or whatever. Yeah.
Mm. Was there anything?
I mean, filming that is very difficult.
Absolutely.
But also, that was a tragedy that I think I wanted with the film to bring an awareness. I mean, my film, there's not really an answer.
No.
But there is a sense of wanting to create an awareness on the tragedy.
Do you think...
For me, it's unacceptable. People die escaping from
tragedy.
From tragedy, from war, from economic disaster, from things, and finding death in the middle of the sea.
Do you think that, because there's one scene where there's a woman, she's making lunch, and there's a news broadcast in the background that tells about the death of that they found the bodies of children, women, and she just says, poor souls, and carries on. Do you think that that's kind of the attitude to the migrant crisis, that it's just in the background?
That's what we do every day. Yeah. You know? We read in the newspaper numbers that don't make sense anymore. You know?
Yeah.
They're just numbers. But when you start thinking that behind this number there are like people, individuals, then becomes a big... step that we have to make it towards our conscience, you know?
Okay, definitely. So perhaps then on a lighter note, Samuel is quite a sort of a breath of fresh air in the film, really. He's so lively and energetic. I mean, what was it like filming him, and where did you find this great character?
Well, I knew that I wanted to have in my film this time a story of a kid. I didn't know how important was going to become the story of the kid. He became the main protagonist, which I didn't know at the beginning, and just I discovered that by filming. And what I realized mostly of him is that he was taking me always somewhere else. You know, like whenever I film his reality, his daily things, the war, the building, the enemy, the lazy eye, the shooting, the playing, all this is bringing me to a different reality. And that's when I talk about transformation. You know?
Sure,
it's something that is so daily basis. Somehow it's able to hold a mood which brings you beyond what I'm feeling.
Yeah,
you know,
very natural.
To create
as well.
This suspension, you know, to create this sense of be able to go on different places, you know, with your mind and with your interaction with the images.
Okay, great. So you won the Golden Bear at Berlin for this film. Congratulations, by the way. And you also won Sacre GRA at Venice.
Sacre Gras.
I mean, do you think...
The Golden Lion, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that documentary should be winning more of these kind of awards that generally favour fictional film? Or, I mean, you mentioned earlier you don't really like the distinction of
documentary
fiction.
It's not the rules that documentary should, should win. It's always a competition there. But I think documentary, there are not so many incredible filmmakers around the world that they make film that, you know, using reality and bringing reality into a different... space of interaction and still making documentary, which I think more and more now they're accepted in the mainstream, you know, like it's happening already in Venice, it did happen in Berlin, and hopefully it will happen in Cannes. And for me it was already a big success to be able to compete in the main category of the festival with a documentary. And then I never thought the film could win, and it happened twice, which is a lot. And I hope this, you know, opens more and more to the fact that you know, documentary can be part of regular
of
filming.
Yeah.
It should not be like a B serious element of the cinema.
Absolutely. So, what documentaries are you liking at the moment? Like. Other documentaries that are around at the moment that you'd like? Are there any that come
Well, unfortunately, recently I haven't seen... I was in Cannes in a jury for a documentary, and we gave this award to a fantastic film on Cima Novo in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And it's a film based on a movement which was called Cima Novo in the 60s. And somehow there's a fantastic approach on this because it's taking these scenes from all the Cima Novo and from cinema through documentary, bring back to a different kind of story, this transformation again. And it was a fantastic film with the language of cinema again, but the subject is always cinema, you know,
sure,
because
it's
a cinema documentary, but the subject is documentary. But what I love about documentary, talking is the challenge, you know, documentary allows you to open to so many different language and to so many different narration that you know, it always push you to find a new way of telling stories.
Yeah.
So I think experimenting in documentary is a very big it's a duty for us, you know, to try to find always different language. If you see in this history of documentary, there's so many transformations on documentary, you know, from the beginning of cinema, which was somehow a realistic shot, to incredible filmmakers and to movements that documentary had, which more and more we lost them in the last 10 years, and yet now it's coming back, you know. It's like the author the author point of view, it's very important in documentary, and the trust that the author can build with the audience and with the people he's shooting.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to wrap up there, but Gianfranco Rossi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you to you.
Thank you.
All right, so he's a really interesting guy. Really, you can tell he really loved cinema, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of interesting things there. One of the most interesting things that I picked up on was what he talked about using cinema to find truth and to find meaning, which I really think he's succeeded in doing in Fire at Sea, but without explicitly telling us anything.
Mm-hmm.
We're never, I feel like in this film, apart from maybe the title card at the beginning about the number of immigrants that go to the island and the number that are killed on the way there, we're never told anything. We just see things happen very casually and passively. So how did you feel about the sort of observational take on its subject?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think for the most part, it really felt for me, especially when it was focusing on Samuel and Samuel's life, like it almost wasn't a documentary. It could have been a film. It was so natural, the way they were acting. It didn't they didn't seem affected by the fact that there was a camera there in their daily life. So I think that must say a lot about how much he embedded himself into their culture, into the surroundings.
Yeah. Totally agree. So natural, and they didn't really seem aware of the camera or kind of looking awkwardly towards it. He had clearly spent a lot of time with the family. And you know that without, you know, just from seeing it on the screen.
And then sort of similarly, again, when he was sort of filming with the refugees coming through, it was so natural, but for a completely different reason because, you know, they can't even begin to take in someone filming them at that point in their journey.
Absolutely, yeah. The scene like where you see Samuel's family at the dinner table, like, it's just...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
It felt slightly strange, I thought. Slightly intrusive.
Yeah, when they're all eating their squid.
Yeah. Helen, you have some interesting thoughts about the dinner scene.
It's just very loud. Some noisy slapping.
Noisy eating.
From a young boy.
So this, there's scenes like that. There's also scenes where you're in the doctor's office with Samuel.
Yeah.
Where he's getting his eyes tested, where he's at school, where he's just privately playing with his friend, and even just on his own walking through the woods. And he never even looks at the camera, which was quite incredible.
Yeah. I think,
For a non-actor.
To kind of get that comfortable in the surroundings.
Yeah, I really... And I was kind of thinking, has he told him to do this stuff?
Yeah, I did think that sometimes. I thought, how much of this... Because that's the problem with documentary. Like, this is... I suppose this is documentary in its rawest form, where there's no voiceover narration. The director's not like Michael Moore. I'm not picking on Michael Moore, but I'm just
he's not in the frame.
Michael Moore's very much in his films. He's almost part of the subject like itself.
It's a Michael Moore film, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's like, you're watching him explore this subject and he's telling you things. Say, this is what I found, look what I did, kind of thing. Whereas this, there's none of that. We're never told anything. This is completely raw, unedited.
Yeah, and I think I love that there was no voiceover or like talking heads really or anything like that, because it just felt so much more like, you know, this is the facts of what's going on here and make your own minds up from that. It didn't need to like hammer in a moral message.
And the same when you see the refugees arriving, you don't need to be told anything because you can see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. You learn so much more looking at what's happening than I did from just the numbers you get in the newspapers.
Yeah, definitely.
And he was saying that in the interview, actually, that at the moment in the European migrant crisis, it's just all numbers. Like, we're bombarded with numbers and it doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything at all. And I think that's what I was kind of saying earlier, that I feel like I've not let myself get involved in it, because it's really easy to read an article and read so many thousand and you forget that each one of these people has a face. And there's a really moving part where, all the migrants are coming in and... You know, there's lots of really sad sort of cases coming through, but there's this one shot of a man who's crying just a single like tear of blood, and it was so unbelievably moving. And that was it. It was never sort of picked up on. No one spoke about it, but it's all you needed.
His voice is still there, though.
Definitely,
the director, because you have to be aware of there's been a process.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, that's the argument. So this is one school of argument about documentary, where documentary should be observational. You shouldn't have someone telling you things. But however, by filming something, someone's picked this shot and edited it in this way to be shown to an audience. So that there is, you're right, there is this rhetoric all the way through constantly. Even though it's more passive than normal, it's still there.
I really enjoyed it, but I also, you know, I really enjoy the Louis Theroux documentaries.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. He's a little bit in between because he tries not to...
Interfere, but he is very much there.
Yeah, he tries... I think his documentaries, he doesn't say, and this is what I think at the end.
Yeah.
And there's kind of an end to the story. It is quite open-ended for you to make up your own mind.
Yeah.
And this one really goes far in making you think about it yourself and not being told. But you have to take into account he's chosen what to put in the film.
Yeah, so how long was he filming it for? Like nearly a year or something?
Over a year, a year
and a half.
So
obviously there's so much that he didn't put in, and what he chose is quite sculpted to his view.
I think so, definitely. His vision. Yeah. It's very much his vision as well, I think. Yeah, absolutely. So did you ever feel like you needed any more context or any more information? Or did you feel that you were giving enough at the beginning and what you get through the film is enough? Were there any points where you're like, I wish we could have someone telling me just a bit more about what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Or did you feel like you didn't? Because I didn't.
I don't think I did need more context, especially not about like the refugees coming in. I knew exactly what was going on there. A little bit with Samuel's kind of life story, and I was kind of trying to work out how
why his story being shown this.
And I think I've kind of made up my own kind of decisions for that along the way, but I think it's quite nice that you get to do that.
I wanted to know what was the sea diver putting in the box.
I'm not sure about sea urchins.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I don't know though.
I have a big question mark about the actual why the sea diver's there, because he seems relatively unconnected to everything as well.
I think it was just kind of trying to show that these, so the 6,000 people that live on this island, so it's a fairly small community, and how it's just daily like life daily there. Life and how connected they are to that ocean.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're plumbing the depths of it for, you know, the fish, for the sea urchins to kind of provide for them. And also, you know, in the depths of this are the drowning bodies of everyone. I don't know.
Good point. Well, that's a good segue actually to the next like topic about the sea itself. That it is really interesting how the sea's shown. So on one hand, it's a sort of generational thing. Like, it's almost like Samuel's father is passing down what he knows of the sea to his son. It's a kind of inherited what he knows of the sea, and it's a place of livelihood. And it's obviously it's a small island, so like fishermen's a major profession there and a major source of income. Whereas, so that's contrasted to kind of with the refugees, where the sea, on one hand, as well, it's a source of opportunity and a way for them to improve their lives. For them, but also it's a place of danger and death for them. So it's a really nice way the sea's contrasted.
And I think it's kind of showing you that like neither choose the sea, because Samuel's not really getting on very well with it himself, but it's kind of his sort of fate in life.
Absolutely,
being
yeah.
born there. He doesn't have a choice, but you know, there's a cute scene where he's sort of throwing up on the boat and he can't,
and he gets like, stuck.
He can't
maneuver himself around the sea. He struggles on the sea to the refugees.
But Samuel is very much portrayed as a lone figure. And it's kind of his... So to him, the sea brings sickness and the sea brings danger. But because it's just him, it's so controlled. When he gets sick, his dad is there and he can go to his dad and they go back home and that's sorted out, you know? His dad says, well, you can go back another day and you'll get more steady with it and you won't feel sick anymore. And when he nearly gets stuck in between the boats when he's just rowing, I'm not actually sure what the relationship was, the guy who helped him. But he just gets helped, you know. He says, hold on, hold on. But he's right there. He's a minute away. In contrast to the boats of migrants coming in who are ringing for help. And it's so far away, and it's what's your location, and they can't tell them their location. So you're saying all of that, that's the juxtaposition, that's the metaphor. However, I was aware not to overload the images. I think also it's a bit different to me, it's a little bit different watching a film just when I'm watching a film and when I know I'm watching it for this podcast. Because I'll be watching it thinking, oh, I need to
pick up on
I need
that.
To work out what's going on, because I'm going to be talking about this film. And I think actually that's not a good headspace to be in. It's just good to watch these images, and it doesn't matter if you watch this film and you can't vocalise exactly what the relationship between Samuel and the migrants coming in. I don't think you need to vocalise that. You can just feel that.
Yeah,
I think so. That's a good point. Well, my next point was going to be, what do you think the reason is? Why do you think he's chosen to make a film like... why is the European migrant crisis explored in contrast with a small boy? But I guess we don't need to. Is that...
I think the images just work together.
They speak for themselves.
Take it in. And so from watching this film, my feeling was... feeling incredibly sad.
Yeah.
And I felt like a motive towards Samuel and compassion and the doctor as well. And I felt that I could understand the hardship that was faced by everyone. I think that's enough. I actually, for me, I don't think I need to then go into, oh, and I think this scene contrasts with this scene. Yeah, and there's a slingshot at the beginning, which is a foreboding sign. Like, sometimes all of that can just get too much. Mm-hmm. And I think this is about a real issue that's going on, and it's enough for it just to be some images of people in times of their lives.
Definitely. I think that's the whole observational thing without any. There's no room for reflection in this film. With no voiceover and no looking back at this thing, I now think this. Because it's so, I think the point of the film is to be so topical and so current. And without the voiceover, it really drums that in even more, that this is happening now. And we don't have time to suddenly reflect on things. We have to act now, which I think gets across.
Although, I get what you're saying, although it's been happening for many years.
Absolutely, yeah, but I mean, in the context of watching the film, it feels like you're watching something that's currently happening.
Yes.
You know, immediately.
Literally, as you're watching the film, there's this another boat.
The film, I think, another like talking point would be the some of the imagery, like, and the, what he gets close to as a filmmaker, like, people when they're on, so on the rescue boat when they're carrying the sick off the boat and laying them in the another boat, and then people crying, and then even just a dead body as well, like a corpse being wrapped up. Like, were you shocked that this was in the film? Because obviously those images come with the migrant crisis, but it's just shocking to see that in this kind of film. I think not a news report.
Yeah, I was like deeply affected by it, and I think it was really important that it was in there. I think it was really brave of him to choose to include it all as well, and not actually try and soften it for everyone. I think, I enjoyed, it's probably the wrong word, but I really felt I benefited appreciated it.
That he made that hard choice.
Definitely.
It's difficult because I think the film is a very good film.
Mm-hmm.
But I just have this point, it's kind of just dawned on me as we're sitting here discussing it. I have this issue that he's saying, like the director was talking about it, oh, I want to find the truth of cinema, and kind of talking about it as art. And now we're all discussing like how it was edited and like his choice to put, like the fact that he had some control over the images that he saw and that he was turning it into his story. Does that take it away from...
I don't think so, because I don't think that it's necessarily... I mean, it is very artistic, but I don't think it's overtly artistic. I think at the end of the day, he's just trying to capture reality rather than show... I mean, obviously, art's always involved in cinema.
And I think other thing is that, you know, this is a... We all agree this is a crazy crisis that's going on at the moment. It's unbelievable. It's something that we all need to think about, and you know, it's a world crisis that we haven't seen since, you know, the Second World War, and a humanitarian crisis like this. And I'm not saying it should be art, but there's something in creating a documentary like this that gets people talking about it, and promotes maybe action from people to do something.
I fully understand that.
Yeah,
I guess my question, and it really is just a question.
Yeah,
this isn't an insult towards the film or anything, but the question is, have we got to a point in humanity where we got to have a nice film that makes you cry to understand the crisis? Like, why isn't it enough just to hear that there's boats full of people, because that's what they are, people, and they're drowning, for us to do something? And I'm not, like, giving my high horse here, because technically I haven't done anything to help them. Like, I think it's a really big issue, but I... You know, I'm not there sorting through the donated clothes in Calais, or I'm not doing any of that stuff. It's just, it makes me think when people say, oh, this film's really good because it makes people realise the crisis. I think it does, but then I wonder, is there something really wrong that we need a film, we need to see it, and we need this film, and not...
Well, I think maybe, but I mean, you also have to think about the fact that we don't get shown everything in mainstream news. Everything has a spin on it. And I mean, I'm sure this has a spin on it too, but we're not, you know, we're not there. We're not on that island. We're not in Greece where this is happening either. We're really safe here in England. And Yeah, and I just think I think anything that brings an extra dimension to our understanding has got to be a good thing.
Well, yeah. I think it's important as well that he didn't set out to make a film about the European migrant crisis. He was making a film about the island. Because, as he said in the interview, he heard the island was an island of tragedy, and he found that this was happening on the island. So I think it developed very naturally, rather than someone thinking, oh, I'm going to make a film about the European migrant crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah, he picked a location and decided to kind of document what happened there.
I think you're right that it can sometimes, not sensationalise, but there is a danger with these kind of documentaries that they are just there to make people cry. But I don't think this film does. I mean, obviously, it's a very sad film, but I think that's just... I don't think the film does that on purpose. I think it's just trying to be... show you, this is happening here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, kind of things. Asking questions rather than giving answers.
Yeah, and just to say, I think it's excellent.
Mm.
And hearing what the doctor has to go through...
Yeah.
...was such an insight that I would never have got if I hadn't seen this film and if this film hadn't been made. And actually seeing the cramped conditions that they live in while they're on the boats, I wouldn't have ever seen that.
The kind of levels of class on the boat.
Or how much they have to pay.
It's so much money to risk your life like
thousands
that.
Thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
To go upstairs, then to go middle and then downstairs.
Yeah, and just crazy. The general conditions on board. I mean, obviously I never thought it was going to be lovely, but
yeah.
You know, the doctor was talking about the chemical burns on the children and things like that. Just really harrowing.
And when they're patting them down, pressing them. First of all, I thought I didn't know that. That looks like they're going into prison or something.
Yeah, it does.
Which is quite interesting about the sort of...
How they're sort of brought into Europe.
The treatment of them. And also the fact that they said they smell of diesel.
Yeah.
Which again was just to show you how uncomfortable they've been for days probably in this boat, that just stinking of and being covered in...
It's about a week, isn't it? They're on the boat, so...
It's just awful.
Absolutely. Mm. So there's a decision that I think is made that's really interesting in the film, and that's to give the people on the island... are essentially fully fleshed, not characters, but they have names. Mm. You know what they do, you know what their relationships are to each other, you know their sort of, their history, etc. The migrants are not giving anything like this. They're not giving any names. They're not really characters. You know, you couldn't really identify, you know, say this person's like this person's like that. They're just almost shown just to be a collective. I mean, what did you think about that decision?
Yeah, I found it interesting because... I think at first I kind of questioned that, you know, why are we making migrants nameless and just... But then I think I thought further, he's making a film about this island.
Yeah.
And actually, if you think about the numbers of people coming through the island, it's not a destination for them.
No.
It's a passing through point. And
absolutely.
I suppose that's what he's trying to capture there.
Yeah.
That it's kind of a three-way town.
Yeah, agreed.
Mm.
I think that's just people's response to the refugees as well. They're just a horde of people that just go from one place to the other. There's no time. And also, there's a slight, I think, thing of where the people on the island are fairly so privileged compared to the migrants that they have time to have that kind of life where they can have these relationships and be these kind of personalities where the migrants have that advantage taken away from them.
They're working to survive at the moment,
That's their main priority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Anything? There's a particular scene when there's some very dehydrated, to the point of death.
Mm.
And there's a few... So the rescue boats, I suppose, I don't know what the real term is, go to get these people off the boat, and the sickest people go first. Mm-hmm. And they're so sick they can't walk. So they're sort of being dragged from one boat to another, and it was just so harrowing to watch. Mm. And then they get onto this boat, so they're just lying on the floor of a boat, and people saying, oh, they need to get some liquid into them, and they're just so helpless.
Mm.
And it's so unfair.
Yeah.
So any final thoughts on the film before we wrap up?
Well, I just think it's such an important important issue. The more we can would look at different aspects of it and understand it, the better, I think. I enjoyed's the wrong word, but I think it's a great film.
Yeah, thoroughly deserving of it. It won the best film at the Berlin Film Festival this year. Meryl Streep, was the one of the head of the jury.
Oh, was she?
So she was. Yeah, she gave it to it.
Well, great. Yeah, I think it's. I think it's very, very good. Just films of this genre make me think about questions about why, what, how we react to things and that. But the film is a great film.
Absolutely agree. Definitely try and catch this one. It'll have a limited release, but so. Yeah, as soon as you can, try and see this. That's Fire at Sea, directed by Gianfranco Rossi. Thank you very much for joining us this week, and we'll be back next week. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.